Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Ben Jackson. I'll be your host once again. And I am joined by Scott and Joris this week. So the full band is back together. How are you guys doing this evening?
Yeah, the full band, as Ben says. I think we call that the trident these days, don't we? Hello, everybody. Hope you're all well. Hope you've all had a good week. Joris has just been telling us about his travels, in which he managed to squeeze in some calcio while you're away, did you, Joris?
Yes, of course. We went to Naples, so a visit to the famous stadium could not lack in that trip. So we went there. It was great, but I'm glad to be back as well.
Yeah, and we're definitely glad to have you back as well, Joris, and hopefully we'll make your week great. Fingers crossed. Genk could do something about that potentially this week as well, but we'll get to them in a little while. Let's quickly run through the results from this recent round of matches. Friday night, Leuven and Antwerp drew 1-1. Circle Rouge Heat, more misery on Stand Liège on Saturday afternoon with a 1-0 win in Liège. Mechelen found their scoring form. They beat Union 4-0 and a bit of a surprise result. Anderlecht, they got another win. They beat Vestalo 2-1. Genk drew 0-0 with Charleroi at home. Gent drew 2-2 with Sint-Truiden. Club Brugge absolutely walloped at RWDM 7-1 at the Anvrijdel. And then Eupen beat Kortrijk 3-1 in an early relegation six-pointer, I guess we could say. But let's go to Leuven then for the first first one of this weekend. Kind of before the game, there'd been lots of chat. I think me and Scott mentioned it last week, like the evening of recording, there was going to be that fan meeting between the fans and some of the people at Leuven. I guess the coming out of that was some weird stuff about wanting to push for the top six. Which was quite strange given their transfer policy. And then there was also one about developing players for Leicester City. Leicester City fans, if there are any of you listening, you could probably name no players that have come through Leuven and then developed to play for Leicester. I couldn't think of any. The only thing I can remember is them kind of developing Sower and then selling him, you guys getting a bit of money for him when he moved to Club Brugge. So a little bit strange. Mark Beers also came out in the week and was talking about he doesn't rule out that they could be fighting for relegation the way things are going and his kind of frustration with transfers and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it was interesting times. But I feel like Leuven kind of do this sometimes where there's a little bit of pressure on them. They put in a result that on paper is pretty decent and a 1-1 draw with Antwerp is definitely decent. However, first half, about half an hour in, they give Richie Delatte the freedom of the entire stadium, basically, to just waltz into midfield, play a ball, bypassing Dorm, Banzuzi and Shrivers in the midfield straight into the feet of Janssen. He's just got plantings on his back, or Rico, I can't remember which one of those it was. He literally just rolls around them, puts it in the back of the net. Just such an easy goal for Antwerp. But Leuven didn't roll over. They stuck in it this time, unlike what they did last time against Union. They had more shots. They actually finished with a better XG than Antwerp, if you believe in that sort of stuff and the importance of that. 0.54 they finished with to Antwerp's 0.53. So not a lot of goal scoring opportunities from either side. But in the 81st minute, Richie Sagrado got a equalising goal. Not bad considering Leuven had been down to 10 men because Hansa Mendel got himself sent off. Picked up a yellow literally straight after half time. And then 5 minutes after the equaliser, he got himself sent off with a second yellow just to kind of frustrate, I guess, Leuven a little bit. But I guess, guys, on paper, a 1-1 draw for them, considering what Antwerp did in last week to Kortrijk and stuff like that, and then the way Leuven have been playing, it's not actually the worst result for them. But I guess kind of you're thinking bigger picture about what they said about pushing for top six and all that. It does kind of beg the question, like, what is going through the mindset of those kind of running the club, where they actually see them going, because what they're doing in terms of transfers and stuff like that doesn't seem to kind of match that ambition.
Yeah, well, we spoke quite a lot about Leuven last week, didn't we, Ben? And the kind of strange goings on there and all of our concerns. And it's been no less of a strange week for them, certainly off the pitch. I mean, a lot of contradictory statements, things that seem kind of wild, and then, you know, statements that back up probably what are, you know, closer to the reality of their situation. Maybe they're just leaving their options open for whichever way it goes. Still a lot of frustration around the club. I kind of feel this is a much better result, obviously, for them. They will see this as a right decent result. Antwerp, although I think a draw probably a fair result over the course of it, there is an argument to say that Antwerp let this one get away from them. I kind of feel they weren't quite at their best, which allowed Leuven to kind of work their way back into it a little bit. And obviously they get a lift. And the new striker comes on and gets a little bit of game time. I was kind of disappointed he didn't start, to be honest. I understand why he didn't. You know, it's the usual when a new player comes in. It's not that uncommon at all, of course, for new players not to be dropped straight in like that. But I kind of felt that might have been just, just the kind of tonic they needed. But there's perhaps an issue with his match fitness at the moment as well. And not wanting to put too much pressure on him. But yeah, I mean, I think from Mark Van Bommel's perspective, they've obviously got a huge game this week, which is being played tonight as we record, against AEK Athens in their Champions League qualifier. Hopefully they can get through that for the coefficient as well. But yeah, I mean, possibly one eye on that. Obviously, Gaston Avia has now left. That's just been confirmed. He's kind of gone to Ajax on a huge deal in excess of kind of 12 million, which is a bit of a surprise, I think, to a lot of us. So an interesting week for Antwerp, and I think their fans are looking forward to tonight.
As they should be, of course, looking forward to that, of course, after such a long wait. But I hope their performance will indeed be a bit better than the ones, actually all the ones they had so far, maybe except the one against Kortrijk. But yeah, I guess we can at the moment already say, but that was Kortrijk. So is that really something you want to base your whole opinion on? The other games have not been that convincing. Also on Friday night. Yeah, indeed, the defending from Platings, it was on that goal was a bit... It was a bit too easy. Of course, it's a great striker's goal from Janssen, but nonetheless, defending could be a bit better there to make it a bit more difficult, at least, to him. But Antwerp, yeah, just I feel like indeed, like they're not at the level yet. They're not enough. It's not enough yet. Missing a bit of a sparkle. Although they did take the lead and they rarely give away a lead lately. Last season, only Union did not lose after they came behind in the playoffs. That was already one of the final games, a crucial game in this title race, ultimately, of course. And on Leuven, then purely focusing on the game here, then Sagrado got his second goal and he's the top scorer for the moment for them as well, with two goals, which is half their goal production, I believe, so far. But all on the hand, how did he not? He did not get a red card for his insane tackle after that, still. Whereas Mendil, it was a bit of a cruel red cards, so to say, as he got that first yellow card for protesting after the penalty. And a penalty was initially awarded to Antwerp, but it was overturned by VAR, but he protested a bit too much, so he did get his first yellow there. And then, yeah, okay, his second yellow was, I believe, rightful, but yeah, it's still a sour way, I guess, to concede a red card. But yeah, also not so smart, I guess you could say. Football smart, at least. And yeah, indeed, still winless Leuven, though. But they got a point which they probably did not expect to get anymore. On that goal from Leuven as well, it was a nice duel, Richie against Richie there, where at the Antwerp van der Laat, of course, He did many things wrong there, basically, and left Sagrado in the end alone to head in the corner from Vlietink. And but good result for Leuven. All in all, not the worst result for Antwerp as results turn out in the rest of the weekend, during the rest of the weekend. But they would have expected to win here. I guess they're also waiting for their first away win of the season still.
I think it's worth pointing out as well, of course, isn't it, guys, that Leuven's new goalkeeper, Maxence Prevot, started in this game as well. And he actually had a very quiet game. So I suppose that underlines, you know, kind of Antwerp, what yours was saying about Antwerp perhaps not quite clicking yet. He had a very, very quiet game where he kind of coasted through it. He'll be hoping that most weeks are like that for him.
Is there like a goalkeeping curse or like I don't know, policy at Leuven that you can't go into the new season with the same goalkeeper that you had the season before? Because ever since they've been in this league, it's just been this constant turnover of goalkeepers, I swear. Like, it's like, okay, Kojakari's is number one. He beat Xhaka's last season to it. And now they've just gone and got this other guy in and he's now number one. Xhaka's has gone to Club Bruges. Like, okay, I'm not going to talk about Leuven's transfer policy again. They play Open next week, and that could be quite a big one for them to kind of show that, that they can, if they have any ambitions of pushing for the top six, they need to beat the likes of Open. And if you think like drawing with Antwerp and then beating Open, like that's kind of, statement wins for that sort of thing. One side who look miles away from the top six, let alone, I don't know, what's the cut-off, the top 12 at this point, are Standard Liège. Joris gave us a great stat about 777 clubs, which I'll let him say because, he picked it out. But they faced Cercle Bruges at home this weekend and it only finished 1-0. But I don't know if the stats really kind of reflect how much I felt that Cercle just looked way more kind of potent and looked like they had a little bit more of an idea about how they were going to attack Standard. And a lot of it was kind of really taking advantage of this, it looked like just a lack of communication in that back three between whoever was kind of near to Marlon Fossey. that kind of the gap between Van Huijsden and Fossey or Bacardi and Fossey, like it was just big at times that they could kind of stop the ball through. And this was happening a lot in the second half, but in the first half, unfortunately for them, Abu Francis went off injured within the first 10 minutes. He's going to be out for a couple of months, I believe, which is a massive blow for Cercle and Abu as well. He is really kind of like coming to his own. Thankfully, they have got kind of a backup in Hannes van der Bruggen. Niels de Veld as well can come in and potentially play in there as well. So they have got some options, but it's a real shame for Abu Francis. Another sub that kind of, made an impact on this game. Well, two subs, actually. Alan Minder comes on the 66th minute alongside De Vild, and it's a pass from De Vild within that gap that I've spoken about to Alan Minder, the 20-year-old Ecuadorian running through, slotting past Bodart to make it 1-0. Denki then looked to have made it 2-0. He made the chance a lot more difficult for himself than he needed to, running into kind of the lesser of the space, but it was a good finish for him. Unfortunately, there was an offside and a build-up, so that one was ruled out. But Cercle were kind of well worth the 3 points, I thought, in this one. That means for Standard, that's still no wins, one draw and just one goal. Only conceded four, so like defensively, four goals in four games, it's not the end of the world by any means. It is just that kind of attacking kind of area. And Scott, you mentioned Van Huijsden last weekend playing quite well. He had a reasonably decent game in this one by the numbers. But yeah, Cercle just looked like they were a side that had the confidence, knew what they wanted to do. And in the end, at the end of the day, they executed a lot better. And yeah, Joris, I'll let you do that stat on 777. But I think from kind of some of the stuff I've read, Erfkins is kind of able to hide behind the anger that the fans will have for the lack of investment. But at some point, it's just going to be anger towards everything that's going on, because this is a really, really poor start to the season from Standard.
Yeah, okay. I can't claim that stat myself. I also only read it somewhere. I can't give the correct credit. But Standard, we know one draw after four games, and that's it for the points haul. That Hertha Berlin is lost all their three opening games after relegation to the second Bundesliga as well. Already Sevilla started the season with two losses as well. Vasco da Gama in Brazil is 18th out of 20 with only 15 goals scored and 6 points off safety, if I'm correct there. And then there's a few other clubs as well that just have started. Even for Sevilla, it's a bit early maybe to say. And also for Hertha, but there the additional factor is that they actually already came down a league. It's a bit early, even for Standard. It's for most teams, except Vasco da Gama, it's a bit early to see, but there seems to be a pattern of them, all of them struggling anyway. I guess that's all you need to know if you don't want to go into all these other clubs either. Yeah, that's worrying for sure. Another worrying thing, indeed, one goal, you mentioned it already, Ben, scored. And at the same time, yeah, you can say that that defense is not necessarily the issue, but well, when you see that defending on that disallowed goal, you also well, don't want to say that too loud, I think. But yeah, and it's now, okay, this is not going to make a situation worse or better for them at the moment, but if you would culminate seasons since last season, the end of last season, it's already 11 games without a win now. Of course, there is a playoff in that, and I think that in one game extra before the playoff still that they did not win, but yeah, okay, that has no relevance at the moment, but it makes the stats a bit even more horrific and the confidence there. Yeah, and yeah, indeed, we all already mentioned as well next week, Standard against Kortrijk, or did we mention, at least we did talk about it before the episode that we against Standard against Kortrijk next week. That's already a very crucial game for both coaches, for both managers. And yeah, this could already be a defining game for the rest of both team seasons as well. Where will this lead to? And then on Cercle, well, to be fair, I don't think they played that well in this game either. It was not their best game. They made a lot of wrong decisions at times, I felt. And Minda also got first had a miss with going one-on-one against Vodar. That was also a close call offside, I believe, afterwards. But that, there it was a bit of a... I felt like, oh, he should have scored that, but then he... Actually, 2 minutes or 3 minutes later, he did score the only goal of the game and decided it with that, which was a nice finish. Yeah, that he definitely seems to be a constant threat anyway. And yeah, that's looking good for them. And maybe it's a good thing for them that they win this game. It's all, there was a little bit of pressure, I felt, more than there should be maybe at the moment, because I think they also have not gotten that many points this season yet on this game. That was a bit undershadowed, of course, overshadowed by other team struggles and their opponent's struggles as well. But a much needed win, but it might also be a good sign that they can win even if they're not completely at their best in this kind of games. And if I'm not mistaken, and if I did not mishear that, it was only the fifth win at Sclessin and in throughout history. And also, I think Scott has more details on how long ago it was, but they also won last season there. So this is the second time they win twice in a row at Sclessin.
Yeah, the hoodoo's been lifted. I think the last time they won back-to-back, I think, dates back to sort of 1929 to 1931, round about then. It's noticeable anyway as a start. I think it'd be fair to say we're back at that point with Standard, aren't we, guys, where I think the anger is building amongst the fan base again, and the frustration, and that thing that Ronnie Dyla had managed to keep at bay for most of last season by squeezing that little bit of extra out of players seems to have completely drained away now. And they've had, I mean, okay, you know, one point out of a possible 12 is kind of terrible. It could only be slightly worse than it is, but it's almost as bad a start as it gets. And last week I was saying that, you know, I don't really care what anyone says about it being early. I think Oefkens is already under pressure. And we know a lot of the issues aren't ultimately his fault, but, you know, he will be the one, as we know, who's going to carry the can should anything happen. And it's kind of, you do wonder what might happen if Standard don't win this weekend on and off the pitch. I'm not sure even, you know, necessarily, you know, a draw would be enough to kind of keep the fan base kind of content. You know, it's definitely the temperature's rising, that's for sure, and the frustration. And obviously Standard's chief executive, Pierre Locht, was out in the press doing a charm offensive this week, you know, trying to explain the ins and outs of some of the finances a little bit more for people who were, you know, wanted to ignore that, which I thought was interesting because it seemed to me like the club was being on the defensive a little bit. So they were certainly recognising, which I suppose is one of the positives here, that, you know, the anger's building. So there needed to be a bit of a conversation and a reality check about that, and they hoped that that would calm things down, but I'm not sure it will. I think the only thing that will are, you know, a few wins. And when you look at their schedule coming up, Standard have got some games that they really should be able to rack some points up. You know, they've got Kortrijk, they're at home to Molenbeek, they're away to Eupen, then they're at home to Westerlo, then they have Leuven. So there's a series of fixtures there, where they would be expected, certainly by their fans, to get all of the points. Thereafter that, it gets a little bit harder because then they go and play Ghent, Anderlecht and Club. So there's an opportunity there to start to turn it around, but the pressure's definitely on. On Cercle, I agree with you, Joris. I felt they weren't quite at their kind of aggressive best here, but I did feel that whenever they went forward, they looked like they had the potential to score. And on Alan Minda, I'm already won over already. I really like everything I've seen from him so far. You know, he's got pace, power. I think the timing of his runs is really quite good as well. Miro Muzlic was delighted to see him score, actually. His reaction when he scored was really, really interesting, I thought. I felt almost as if they'd actually been waiting for that. So they've obviously seen really good things from him in private that everyone else doesn't see in training, I suspect. But yeah, he's looking like a really good pickup for Cercle.
Yeah, I think you can see the Zinkernagel Alzate shaped hole in that side, can't you? Quite evidently. And then kind of seeing what Zinkernagel is doing at the other kind of on the opposite side of the country as well, it just kind of hammers the home. That big loss, and kind of the young players will take time, but how much time do you get in a situation where the fan base is quite enthusiastic and that can benefit you as it did last year? Like, they really did rally behind the team, but their frustration will be that, yeah, like Dyla leaving, while they're obviously angry at where he's gone to and why he left and all that, they all know the reason why he left is the cause of their frustration as well. So I mean, if they can't score against Kortrijk, then they're in a massive load of trouble because, yeah, I think anyone can score against them at the moment. One side that, yeah, kind of rediscovered some scoring prowess was Mechelen at home to Union Saint-Gilloise. Said earlier, 4-0 win for them. All the goals basically come in on the counter-attack apart from the fourth. The first one was a really, really nice strike from Mrabti on the counter. Looked like he just didn't quite have the pace to actually take it further into the box, as he probably should have done, but he just leathered it with the outside of his foot from outside the box into the corner. 1-0 at half-time. Union rang the changes at half-time. Gustav Nielsen came on to try and get them back into the game, but they definitely weren't at their best in this one. A much better performance from Mechelen, who, yeah, like I said, clinical on the counter-attack. Herleman's getting the second one. Some nice work from Nicholas Storm to keep the kind of the attack going. He crosses it to the back post and Herleman's kind of fluffs it in past Maurice, who, yeah, would have been quite disappointed, I think, with that one going in. Vahali comes off the bench to get his first goal for Mechelen, again on the counter-attack, but a really nice finish from him. And then Big Batesy gets his first goal of the season as well from a corner in kind of added time. I don't know whether to say it's out of nowhere that Mechelen have kind of come and won this game, but it's quite an impressive result for them against the Union side that have been really on a roll. Whether or not they've kind of had their eye on their kind of European tie coming up this week as well. Kind of like Antwerp, it may explain why they had a little bit of a drop-off in form, but nonetheless, guys, a really, really good result for Mechelen. And I guess for Union, it's now they really do need to put in a performance against Lugano on Thursday night to kind of put that one behind them. But definitely Scott Azar, Mechelen kind of sympathiser, that is exactly the result that Stephen Dufour needed this early stage of the season.
Yeah, just what the doctor ordered for Malinwa, that's for sure. They really, really needed that. I think the 4-0 scoreline does flatter them a little bit. I don't think, despite them being much the better side and certainly deserving to win the game, I think 4-0 does flatter them a little bit. It certainly wasn't a 4-0 game by any stretch of the means. I think that as much as they needed that, they've also had the other positive news that Patrick Fluck has now come in who I think is quite a promising attacker. I think he's 26 now, so he's approaching the peak of his career, and he looks like quite a promising pickup for Mechelen. I think he will be thrown straight in probably this weekend. I think the injury situation at the club means that Mori Kanate, who has now had his visa issues addressed, might start to feature a little bit earlier than the club would like. Even if he's not fully fit, that might be forced upon them, which is not necessarily a bad thing, I don't think. But I think we know they're better at home, Mechelen. That's worth underlining here. They're always much more comfortable playing at home. They have a style of play that, you know, they just seem to be able to click into when they're playing at home. They need to be able to bring more of that mentality and approach to away games, I think, if they're going to do reasonably well this season. I think Stephen Defoe was delighted with this, but probably more relieved than anything else. Because things around the place had just been feeling a little bit lethargic from their point of view. I know the fans, again, speaking of standard fans getting frustrated, some of the Mechelen fans, you know, early signs of a little bit of frustration and wondering, you know, what exactly is going on. Nobody quite saw this relative thumping coming. Ben's right, Union were disappointing by their standards, and certainly, you know, considering how they've actually started the season, not much really clicking for them at all. And just watching the game, you felt they were never really going to get back into it. I had a slightly nervous sort of 10-minute spell in the second half, you know, where it was only 1-0, and, you know, Union were having a period of domination of possession, but I thought, you know, it's the age-old, as long as you're only 1-0 up, the opposition are kind of still in it, but it was put to bed kind of quite quickly after that, you know, much to my relief, as much as anyone else's. But yeah, they'll be hoping this is the beginning of something. Looking at Mechelen's fixtures coming up, they've got some winnable ones as well. You know, they've got Westerlo, they've got Eupen, then they go to Steyn to play Fink ball. That could be an interesting game. Then they have Leuven and Antwerp. So they have a little run coming up where there are potential points for them there. So they'll see that as a positive as well. Union's schedule is just about to get that little bit more busy, obviously, with a big game coming up this week as well. So they're still looking, obviously, to do a bit of business as well over the next couple of weeks before the window closes.
Not that much to add, but yeah, first home goals, first win, first clean sheet, all boxes that can be ticked for Mechelen. Definitely needed against a team that always scores in Mechelen, well, always concede, so that particularly that clean sheet might do some good for the confidence. Also only conceding one shot on targets even from Union, whether that's, well, that's down to both teams, of course, both sides, and there was a shot on the bar as well, I remember, but nonetheless. And also, yeah, this is really the bogey fixture for Union. They've lost all their ties there since coming back to the first division. I believe it's even 3-1, 3-0, 4-0. So all quite clear defeats, plus a defeat in one of the cup runs in these seasons as well. So yeah, so already four games that they have not won achter de kazerne. So that also makes it more difficult to be too concerned about it. We'll have to see how it develops, and indeed it might be more relevant that they will indeed get it, starting to get a bit busier schedule as well. But at the moment, I feel their squad indeed might need a few more reinforcements for some depth for that.
To be fair, they did like quite a Football Manager-esque move by signing Lugano's Mohamed Amoura, so he can't play against them during this game. So it's like an interesting pick up the Algerian can play as a winger or a striker. So yeah, they've grabbed him from their upcoming opponents. Very Football Manager-esque. Be interesting to see how that one goes. Let's go to Sunday's matches. First one, which was Anderlecht against Vestalo. I was watching England women lose, unfortunately, in the World Cup final, so missed the beginning of this, which meant I missed the first goal. Kasper Dolberg, from a really nice move, actually, from Anderlecht, just straight from back to front. Eventually, the ball finds Tio Leone. He whips it in. Dolberg tucks it home for 1-0. They had to wait until About 70 minutes gone to make it two. Leone's corner finds Vertonghen, or a corner eventually falls to Vertonghen, who rolls back the years, I guess you could say, literally and figuratively, as he literally rolls past one of the Veselé defenders and smashes it into the bottom corner to make it 2-0 to Anderlecht. Veselé did try and put the cat amongst the pigeons late on. Jordanov grabbing a goal back, not really a consolation at that point, in the 80th minute. Matsui with the assist, just kind of playing it back to him, and Jordanov, a really nice finish actually from him. But unfortunately for Veselé, that's their third defeat on the bounce. And to be fair to them, kind of looking at their fixtures, obviously they came back from 2-0 down in their first game of the season against Open to draw 2-2, and then they've had a pretty tough run of it, to be fair. Just trying to remember who else they've played, but obviously, yeah, they lost to Club Brugge 1-0, lost again 3-1 at home, and they played Anderlecht to lose 2-1. So the easiest of games for the side, but they'll be facing Mechelen next, and they'll be hoping to get back to winning ways, because currently they are second bottom, but their kind of run of games has been a slightly more difficult than anyone else's. For Anderlecht on the other end, that's three wins in a row now, I believe, all by one goal. Interesting kind of team selection, I guess, here. We saw Benito Raman starting on the wing over Amuzu, who's highly linked with the move away anyway. Matsuits obviously came in. He started, got his debut. Flips came in and got his debut as well. Looks like Thomas Delaney might be signing on loan from Sevilla. Good player on his day. Haven't seen him for a while, actually, since he played in the Bundesliga, but was always a fan of Thomas Delaney. So they're strengthening in that midfield area. They start to get a little bit of momentum. So maybe this will kind of ease a little bit of pressure that was starting to mount on Brian Reimer and Jesper Fredberg as well.
That's indeed three wins in a row. And well, imagine they can take the lead if they get a good result in the upcoming weekend, purely due to the fact that all teams around them do not play this weekend. And that has to do with European football as well, of course. So yeah, but this could be an interesting weekend for Anderlecht fans, even if it's a bit artificial, of course, that they could take the lead with the league. But yeah, also, yeah, Vertonghen, where did that come from? he's a good player. Obviously, he's always been a good player, but he's not really known to be very... well, quick on the turn and so on. And then we know he has a good technique in his feet, but also with his weaker. How did that happen? But yeah, that was a really great goal. Also, that first goal, I agree with Ben as well. That was a really great attack as well. Well, flowing attack. It was a little bit not so interesting statistic is that it was their first home win against Westerlo since 2015. And well, that sounds way more dramatic than it is, of course, with Westerlo also playing 5 years in the division below. So without this fixture on the list, of course. But nonetheless, a few times in a row that's on itself still a rarity. So that's why I'm still mentioning it. Yeah, and for Westerlo, well, the first shot on target was that goal, which was in the 80th minute. So I'm a bit worried for them. Indeed, they had a bit of not the easiest fixture list, but yeah, they really need to pick up some points now quickly because yeah, you can't combine such offensive stats with conceding after 30 seconds. Yeah, that could put you on a bad track. To be fair, Jordanov really had a big chance as well to actually make the equalizer a few minutes after his goal, where he headed the ball wide, where it was, well, the goal was open to score. And but then also, on the other hand, to be fair to Anderlecht as well, like that should not have mattered. They should have, they should have easily been out of sight in this game. Westerlo were really not up for this game, and only late on could put on some pressure. But I'm sure some people will have thought about, we're not going to do the same thing as the last few years, concede in the last, play quite well and concede an equalizer in the last 10 minutes, even giving away a 2-goal lead. And that indeed did not happen this time around. And starting with 3 wins out of 4, which is probably more than they would have expected.
Yeah, I think Anderlecht absolutely dominated this game and completely deserved to win it. Two pretty fine goals as well. And judging by the reaction of the Anderlecht bench when Jan Vertonghen scored, they were also thinking, where did that come from? Was that really one of our centre-halves? Yeah, great goal. I have to say, I actually really admire Anderlecht's resilience at the moment. You know, after match day one, where they were just wretched against Union, you were a wee bit worried for them, even though it was much earlier in the window still. Three wins in the bounce now, you know, as you guys were saying, you know, a few faces have come in since then, kind of quite carefully chosen as well. And I think, although they haven't had a massive impact on the pitch as such yet, I think them waiting carefully for the right targets, I think, is and their patience, particularly Jesper Fredberg's patience and how he's gone about his business, is really starting to be proven to, you know, be smart business. The fan base, you know, and this is something we've already said about a couple of other teams, were a bit restless. I think they'll be a little bit more settled now, feeling a little bit better about themselves. Lot of signs of encouragement. And I think, you know, what Ben was saying, you know, about some of those wins being narrow wins, I think sometimes you just need to get some points on the board to get your confidence so you can relax. We're not quite seeing the sort of free-flowing attacking Anderlecht that the fans would like to see. But at the moment, they will absolutely take the wins to kind of build their confidence. And as Joris says quite rightly, the important thing is, depending on how things go this coming weekend, they could be sitting very pretty and happy at the top of the table. Westerlo, yep, just need to ride the wave. I think I agree with both you guys. I think, you know, there's probably a sense that there weren't too many points in these opening games for them. Anything they could have got would have been a plus. I think their business this far this summer has actually been okay, and their recruitment has been better than a lot of sides over the last couple of years, I think. So, they're just coming into a period now where there are some games where they would certainly expect to pick up some wins, that's for sure. But yeah, I think Anderlecht are definitely showing signs of improvement, and the ultimatum that was apparently handed to Brian Reimer after the Union game about make sure we're in the top six by week six, he looks like he's going to be sitting pretty by that point.
Yeah, I think he'll be all right on that front. Speaking of frustrated fan bases, let's go to Genk against Sporting Charleroi. This one finished 0-0. If you just look at the stats, it kind of, yeah, Herv Coffey, man of the match on foot mob with 7 saves. He faced an XG of 2.32. Genk had, my numbers are correct, 23 shots in total to Charleroi's 7. You could kind of tell, like, the Charleroi approach and the fact that Debag was on the bench. Bernier was brought in to play as a more forward player. Well, they didn't play Morioka as well. A rare start for him with Ilamaricha out, suspended. But loads of injuries for Charleroi at the moment are really coming up. Like Kenan Kuba still out, Jackson Chetswai, Jules Van Cleanput's just permanently injured or ill. Stefan Knezovic injured. The list kind of goes on for them. No Mike Tresor or Brian Hennen for Genk in this one. Tolio Lacadare started up front over Yela Saw, but yeah, no one could find the back of the net or find a way past Herv Coffey. The rumours are still circulating about a swap deal for Paintsil and Onuachu with Southampton. It doesn't help that during the week, falling late to Olympiacos to get knocked out of the Europa League, which means Genk now drop all the way down into the Conference League, where they will play Adana Demirspor from Turkey, and just hope that they can get through that one at least to get into the Conference League. But Joris, I know your frustration's obviously been building, and we kind of see it from you in terms of finding a second striker and all that sort of stuff. But this game must have been really frustrating in terms of the amount of chances that Genk could create, but just not find the back of the net.
Well, if you look at the stats, maybe, but the stats are painting a bit too rosy a picture as well. I don't think there was that. They should probably have won. They deserve to score. But yeah, like it's a bit there were not that many clear-cut chances either. But it's more the accumulation of everything that makes this a very, very frustrating game as well. But it's also six home games without a win now, which is promising for this Thursday. But the silver lining there might be that that this is finally the first leg is a home game, so it's not decisive in Europe. So even if this result would not be a win, so far they actually have also not lost in Europe at home, but not in regular time at least. It's the accumulation of circumstances, but and maybe I don't want a second striker, but I do want a first striker. And well, actually, there need to be more strikers as well, because if you just go through the list, I'm not going to do it now, but from strikers from that left last season, including Yongheng strikers as well, there's definitely not have been a lot of enough replacement for that. Another weird silver lining is they actually have the best defense of the league now. I've been criticizing this so much last season, but they've only conceded once in four games now. Unfortunately, in combination with not scoring, this doesn't make for the best watches of games either. This was also a weekend they could have done a really good job. Again, other teams that are in the top of the league now and have been in the past few seasons also dropped points here, so they could really have done some catching up and then really make things a bit more quiet around the club as well. Also, in a weird way, Payne still getting the red card in that a very, very stupid red card in that European game and being punished a bit in this game by not starting, not getting start, might have hurt in this game as well, because since he came on and Oye came on, let's hope he gets some more minutes now as well, because he made a good impression actually. Since there actually was no out-and-out striker on the pitch around 70th minute, some chances came. Sadly, Paisel missed a few of them as well. But that part, I do not blame him for. At least he got them. You can miss chances, or a goalkeeper can save chances. But there was some danger, some threats there. It is a bit of a weird phase of the season, and they really need to turn it around quickly, of course, because the schedule has not been as bad, so there should have been more points shown than after four games than just the seven that there are now, and this horrible statistic at home as well, of course. But let's see. I hope they finally get that striker, or that the system will be tweaked a bit anyway as well. As I do not believe in both Rekodare and Sor in either position that Sor can play, actually. I really do not see why we waited a few months even. We ran two windows behind him. But okay. For Sharawa, a point, and I guess that's everything said. I heard Mazu in his interview say that they could have gotten more out of this game, and in a way, I get that sentiment, but also not really, because they did not create that much. They got a few chances. Let's not forget that either. But it's not that they really could really say that they really deserved more based on how the game was panning out. And they're still winless as well, though. So they are also not in the best of forms. They have just signed Adrien Trebel. For their another midfield signing, I'm curious how this everything will go there in the central midfield, because that's an area where they're now really overpopulated, I feel, as indeed Morioka got his first start since Mazu took over, which was halfway the season last season, or even before halfway, I believe, or maybe it was his first start since the first game of Mazu, something like that. Anyway, it's indeed a very rare feat nowadays. I'm also wondering maybe maybe there might be some outgoing movement then there for some midfielder there.
Yep, I can't add too much, guys, to Joris's excellent analysis there. Genk should have won this on the basis of play, much, much better from them They'll be a little frustrated that they didn't on the balance of play, that's for sure. The number of chances they actually created, just one of those. Funnily enough, I think the way things have been going recently for Genk, you know, kind of getting a point in the end probably will perversely be seen as a bit of a positive. You know, in light of some of the recent disappointments and games where they actually, you know, played well in large chunks, but then in key
I can tell you, no, that's not the case. I think against Olympiacos, they also didn't lose. Against Servette, they also didn't lose. That's not the point. You need to win home games.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's just it's a silver linings thing from my sort of neutral perspective, I think. I think, you know, Joris's point about actually when you look at the stats in this game and you don't win it, then, yeah, you know, you do have to ask some kind of questions. But, you know, I think, you know, the way their luck's been running recently and stuff, it's just maybe the sign of a corner turning. I suppose it's the one big question mark overhanging it was what Joris came back to earlier was, you know, where is the striker? No one seems to understand really what the strategy is. I think there's only really two or three people who probably know, and unfortunately we don't have a microscope inside Dimitri de Conde this evening, the man with all the answers. Joris is right, Adrian Treble has been confirmed this evening. This was very much the Herve Coffee show, actually. Ben mentioned them back at the beginning. He had an amazing game, probably the best goalkeeping display of the weekend. Certainly standout player in this game in lots of ways. I think he had something like 7 or 8 saves, I think, across the game. Just, you know, one of those great games. But we know what a fantastic shortstopper Coffee can be, and we haven't quite seen the best of him, actually, for a while, but he really stood out here. Joris brought up Morioka, kind of been out of the picture, as Joris was saying. I think there had probably been an expectation that Morioka was going to move on before now, and although there has been interest in him, nobody's been able to agree a deal with him. I think his wages have proved a potential stumbling block for a couple of sides. Kortrijk actually were quite interested in him a few weeks ago, but couldn't agree a deal, perhaps unsurprisingly, because there was the ownership issues ongoing there kind of complicated any potential deal. So yeah, Joris is right. How's that going to work in the centre potentially with him and with Treble coming in? So yeah, there could be more movement there yet. That's one to kind of keep an eye on. Disappointing start on the whole to the season for Charleroi. Joris is right to underline that as well. I felt, you know, in our pre-season preview that, you know, they probably were going to do all right, and I still think they will, but they've had a sluggish start, to say the least.
Yeah, sluggish is definitely the word, and yeah, I guess maybe that means Sogan is going to get the move that he definitely wants and probably deserves. Two sides at opposite ends of this kind of striker debate as well. St. Truiden very much like Genk needing a striker, and Genk just seeming to have all the good ones. But it was St. Truiden who started the better in Genk away from home. Some kind of sloppy play from Genk in kind of just not really getting control of the ball early on. The ball eventually found Mathias de Lorge, who found Abubakari Koita. Kaya tried to like run to create the angle for Koita to cut in, but instead Koita just followed Kaya on the outside and then just smashed it into the back of there anyway, so it didn't really matter. De Lorge then got the second after a corner wasn't cleared by Genk to make it 2-0 to St. Truiden within the first 12 minutes. And yeah, they probably scored a little bit too early, but it was a kind of another reminder of how different this St. Truiden side is compared to last year's. Probably nothing kind of more evident than that than the way they conceded the first Genk goal. Corner comes in, they all kind of rush towards the ball, which is flicked on, and Orban is just there to take Watanabe's flick and just tuck it into the back of the net. Absolutely no one around him. Taruna Riga then completes the comeback with a ridiculously good finish for a central defender in the second half. Again, another Coombe set piece. Finds him at the back stick. He tucks it in to make it 2-2. Neither side could find a winner in this one. They kind of chucked loads of different players on each to kind of try and get back into the game. Ghent finished with 19 shots, St. Truiden with 14 shots, which, yeah, just compared to last year's absolutely ridiculous numbers compared to, yeah, how many they would have tried. So I guess kind of the summary of this one is that both sides will be disappointed. Ghent will definitely be disappointed that they dropped points at home. Could have taken advantage of Union and Antwerp both dropping points, but they weren't able to do that. For St. Truiden, they'll just be disappointed that they weren't able to hold on to a 2-goal lead. However, I think if, let's say, they don't add another striker before the end of the window, I feel like a point away at Ghent at the end of the season could be a massive, massive point for them if they are in the bottom four. So, yeah, disappointment, I guess, for both sides in this one.
Yeah, I think Finkball kind of continues to surprise and delight on the whole. You know, racing away into a 2-goal lead, you know, the dreamland stuff for the Canaries, particularly going to the Gemelco to play Ghent, who, you know, started the season very strongly, and as we know, have got a lot of firepower. So, you know, I didn't see a lot of this game, actually. This was one of the games of the weekend, I felt, and I knew coming into the weekend that I wouldn't see a lot of this one because of other things going on. So I've gone back and had a look at some highlights of this one. And, yeah, I mean, from what I saw, St. Truiden will be disappointed, especially as they should. You know, you race into a 2-goal lead there, you'd expect to be able to kind of hold the game out. Again, starting slowly as they did and well, as they do a lot. They haven't this season, ironically, of course. I think a draw is probably a fair result, ultimately, on the whole. And, you know, Ben's point about St. Truiden needing that extra striker, which we've been talking about, is one definitely to kind of keep an eye on. I have a worry. I do think that at the back, despite all of the potential there, particularly that second Ghent goal, Tuonariga's goal, for me is really quite poor. Although it's a brilliant finish, he simply takes a step away from the defender, and, you know, he doesn't have his man, and makes it easy for him in the end. So I felt that both the goals that St. Truiden kind of conceded were pretty cheap, and actually just underlined a little bit of the inexperience there. I think if they can bring in a couple St. Truiden and particularly up top, and I think for me, another defender is probably a good idea, just for depth and competition, to be honest with you, because I think although they are playing very well, and we've highlighted that a lot over the last couple of weeks, rightly so, my worry is that, you know, the great form that they're in could, and I emphasise could peter out, you know, without some reinforcements there. What we don't know yet is whether Finkball is a great start to the season that's going to peak at some point, or whether, you know, there are trends in there in terms of how they've adapted their play that we're going to be able to see being reasonably effective through the course of the season. And that's one of the big early season kind of questions. Interesting one, this.
Yep, St. Truiden doing way better than anyone expected so far. Let's see if that will continue. But definitely that first 15 minutes, maybe even 30 minutes, that was really great football from them. And they did take advantage of that. They took a 2-goal lead, but it should have lasted a bit longer, or they should have scored a bit more as well, of course. They also should be working this week on defending on set pieces as well, of course, because they conceded twice on them. And twice, quite especially that second one. I don't know how that happens on a set piece, completely unmarked. And the first one as well, like, well, okay, it was already a deflected one, and then the second and at the second post putting it in. But I've seen that pattern last season a lot for my own team, and even this weekend it could have happened again. So this is definitely something you can anticipate as well, or should at least. So I do agree that maybe in defense they need to shore up a bit. Nonetheless, they're doing better than expected so far. For Ghent, losing the maximum of points, just like anyone else, of course, but they were the last team to do that. So I guess they still will be relatively happy that they came back, even though after they came back and like they throughout the game, they had a lot of chances as well to make it a bit more and even grab the win still. But it wasn't to be But nonetheless, I guess they will be slightly happy that they came back and at least got a draw out of this still.
Yeah, definitely kind of glass half full or glass half empty, depending on what way you look at it. Scott mentioned the word thinkable. We have now, fully behind that phrase. If you are someone who likes kind of like data and stats and stuff like that, I did have a little look at the comparison. I know it's like a small sample size, but kind of between the numbers from last season for St. Jude and under Hollaback and what they're doing this season. And yeah, it's kind of chalk and cheese, as they say, the difference between the two. So if you are interested, you can head over to, I think it's still on my Twitter account, at BenJack94, and you can kind of find it there. But I think we retweeted it from the podcast one as well. So if you are interested in looking at that, feel free to go ahead and check that one out. One side that, put on a nice little footballing clinic, thanks to Mr. Skov Olsen, were Club Brugge against Molenbeek. We had a 6-1 last week. We've now had a 7-1 this week. And while it's great for Club Brugge fans, I think for the league, it's not great to have these sort of results in terms of competitiveness. And I think this just was a very, very naive Molenbeek against a very, very clinical Club Brugge. Maxime de Kuyper with a fantastic cross to get the game going. He finds Zinchenko, who just flies in to head it into the top corner to make it 1-0. Molenbeek do then get back into the game. Alexis Desart with his second great assist in a matter of weeks to the back post to find Florent Da Silva to tuck in to make it 1-1. That's kind of where it ends for Molenbeek. Andreas Skov Olsen, after a nice assist from Nusa, makes it 2-1. I have to say, I thought Nusa was fantastic in this game as well. I thought this is one of the best games I've seen from him in a Club Brugge shirt. 2-1 at halftime, and then kind of, the floodgates opened. De Kuyper actually came off. Kiliana Sabek came on, and he got an assist for Thiago Rodriguez. The Molenbeek defence just completely disappeared for this one, and Thiago basically had the whole of the Jan Bridle to himself to tuck it in. Skov Olsen then, I don't know what this was. It was the weirdest kind of short corner routine. He goes to cross it with his left foot towards kind of the near post, and De Fourny just kind of, I don't know what he does, just kind of messes it up completely. You mentioned Coffey had one of the best goalkeeping performances of the weekend. I think De Fourny had by far the worst in this one. Bless him. It was really, really poor kind of from him. They then make even more changes. It's just kind of unfair. They're chucking on Yaremchuk. They're chucking on Hans van Aken as well. Nusa then gets his deserved goal to make it 5-1. De Fourny then completely messes up from a corner for Buchanan to make it 6-1. And if I can't remember, I think this is very reminiscent of the goal against Erpen, in which it's just a corner to the back stick and he heads it in. But this one was even kind of a little bit more central, and I don't know where De Fourny is. And then just to make kind of sum it all up, Abner just, under absolutely no pressure, turns the ball into his own net later on to make it 7-1. Rude awakening for Molenbeek. Definitely kind of, this is what some of the big boys can do to you. They obviously then were pretty comprehensively beaten by Genk to open the season. But to be fair to them, guys, they've then beaten some sides that they need to beat if they want to stay in the league. So while they can probably kind of pass this up as one of those days, it's a worrying sign for them, and it's probably a little bit concerning for the rest of the league that club have, they've got this in them. Zinchenko just seems to have fitted in seamlessly into this kind of front line. Olsen looks really, really good. Nusa, as I mentioned, looked really, really good. Rodriguez is finding the net as well. Buchanan, if he's staying as well as a right back, looks really, 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 really comfortable in there. So, fantastic result for Club Brugge. Puts them at the top of the league. For Molenbeek, a little bit of naivety, not something they want to kind of repeat again. And then I guess kind of my last point on this, for the league as a whole, a 6-1 followed by a 7-1, just it's not a great look in terms of competitiveness, but you can't fault Club Brugge. This was a comprehensive performance from them.
Yeah, they're starting to look really, really good. We talked about how Ronnie Dyla had mentioned how happy he was on kind of reaching a sort of settled starting 11, which he seems to have done, and that's been reinforced really again this week. It's really interesting, that front line that Ben was talking a lot there. There are now four players competing, much to Ronnie Dyla's delight, I suspect, for those three places. You know, Alston's, Inkernakel and Noosa starting this weekend. Hans van Aken would normally start in one of these roles, and, you know, has had plenty of game time. But I just find it interesting that, you know, at the moment he seems to be the one who, you know, of the four, is potentially at the bottom of the pecking order. And nobody, I think, would have quite thought that Philip Zinkernakel was going to come in and quite hit the ground running the way that he actually has done. Remember that story a few weeks ago I was telling everybody about a Standard fan getting in touch with me, talking about this transfer, saying, yeah, well, Zinkernakel going to club, he's not really at club's level, so it doesn't really matter. Well, he's come in and, you know, he's started really, really well. And he's got a great relationship with Ronnie Dyla, obviously, and that was the real reason behind the move. You know, he wanted to rekindle that relationship, and they've kind of picked up where they left off. Yep, definitely looking ominous for everybody else at the moment. They're starting to look very settled. De Kuyper has picked up a minor muscle injury, so he might miss a couple of games. We'll need to see whether the rest that's required for that will be enough to see him not miss any more games than that. So that's one to kind of keep an eye on. Yeah, but even Roman Yaremchuk, who Ben mentioned, seems to have had a relative renaissance. Obviously, he got his hat-trick a few days ago as well in Europe, which will have done him the world of good. And he's obviously, you know, ready to step in and take Rodriguez's place should anything happen there. And I suspect he will get some opportunities this season as well. Ben's right. Molenbeek have actually, you know, they've been battered by two of the top sides who we know have lots of quality, which isn't really that much of a surprise in a way. But they have picked up points so far against sides that they have to be able to compete against. So from Molenbeek's point of view, I think they'll be pretty happy with their start to the season so far.
Yeah, especially since Noosa really indeed had a great game, but he also, his opponent was a player who was actually a midfielder, had to play on the back because they have a little of issues there. Not only he only played at the back, but I believe he only made one appearance at Molenbeek of 1 minute before. So, yeah, he really had a torrid game as well, whoever he was. I forgot his name now. It might have been Diallo, but if so, it was only one half at least. But yeah, that shows they have some work to do, maybe still on the squad as well. But yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. So that's okay. These are for them not the games that they could grab some points. And on the other hand, like until it was 2-1 until quite late in, well, relatively late in the game, 15th minute or so after this, quite some time, they actually were quite in the game. Then they even created some chances there. I'm still, despite the offensively Club Brugge look really good, but defensively I still have my worries. They have not really been tested. This week might come a real big test on that front against Osasuna in the Europa Conference League playoffs. But we'll have to see how it goes. Oh, not only there, but also in the future. I feel like they still could use someone there to reinforce. But yeah, so far so good, and came off to a flying start and took the first place now as well after this weekend. And y'all, for the rest, I guess you guys said it all. Just yeah, it was a bit typical that an own goal topped it off for both. Well, especially for RWDM then and for Molenbeek to make it a seventh goal. But that luckily did not matter that much anymore in this specific game. But hard to make any conclusions for either side actually based on this game. But a confidence boost for one and a reality check for the other.
Yeah, I think that's quite a nice way of summing that one up, for sure. Wonderful to see Hubert in between the sticks in the next game for Molenbeek. Let's go to the final game of the weekend. Kortrijk against Erpen. Winless Kortrijk. A couple of new players in their side. Abdoulaye Sissoko got a start. Thierry Ambrose got a start as well. Unfortunately for them, Thierry Ambrose got injured and he might be out for the season, which is just absolute rotten luck for the player and for Kortrijk as well. He did actually say in the week that he kind of did have second thoughts after the 6-1 defeat or 6-0 defeat fought by Antwerp. And I was like, that's fair enough, quite open to admit it. And he had offers from Rakow in Poland as well. And I don't know, maybe he wished he'd gone there. But we wish him all the best, of course. And we hope for a speedy recovery for him because, yeah, it sounds like quite a horrible one. And it's not nice to see anyone injured for that length of time, especially when he probably was going to be such a key player for them this season. Whether you rate him highly or not, I think he would have been key for them. Unfortunately for Kortrijk, it was just, the game just kept going from bad for worse after that. Just 10 minutes later, Uppen take the lead. Isaac Nuhu, who I think I've spoken about a couple of times about needing to see some more from him in terms of production. He finds Gary Magny in the box. Magny cuts onto his left foot and whips it past Tom Vandenberg into the back of the net. Lovely, lovely finish from Magny. I feel like he's good for a couple of goals a season, is Gary. He pops up every now and then to find the back of the net. Very, very versatile player for Uppen. Can play at fullback or central midfield and they kind of just chop and chain him around. But yeah, lovely, lovely finish from him. Then went from bad to even worse to even worse to even worse for Kortrijk when they went 2-0 down. Christian Malinov came off the bench for his debut since joining from Leuven. He won the ball back, but unfortunately gave it straight to Nuhu and Keita. Keita finds Nuhu. Nuhu flicks it behind. Keita continues his run. Lovely, lovely finish from Amadou Keita, who, have to be honest, guys, I think if Mervald's still fit or if the kind of after last year, I don't think Keita's getting much game time behind those guys. So he took his chance really, really well. At that point, the Kortrijk fans are in just complete and utter frustration and anger at what's going on. Their only real player of quality then steps up in Kadri. Just if you can't kind of rely on anyone else, to do it yourself. He finds the back of the net with a really nice finish past Lanina, who was probably desperate for a clean sheet after the kind of the rude awakening he had with Club Rouge at home for Urban last weekend. But unfortunately, there's nothing he could do about the goal. Really nice finish from Kadri. It was then kind of quite tense from then on out. Couple of substitutions made for either team. A weird one from Kortrijk with Atamona coming on for João Silva. I thought it was quite random, especially when you're chasing the game from still. But I guess it kind of sums up the options he had on the bench at that point. He'd pretty much chucked everyone on. Alfred from Boggesen, he got his first start for Erpen, the new signing. Bundesliga fans will remember big Finn Boggesen, 34 now. But he looked all right. Probably a little bit off the pace, but maybe he'll get there. Not the worst option. I thought he could be quite a good kind of off the bench option, but as a starting striker at this point, I'm not sure he's really what they want. But they have been linked with Sebastian Andersson, who might be a little bit more suited. But it just feels like they're just trying to find anyone that's played in the Bundesliga at this point. A couple of minutes before the end of the game, I said it kept getting bad for Kortrijk. It then got even worse when Felipe Avenatti got himself sent off. I can't remember who he pushed in the box, but it was just stupid pointlessness from Avenatti. He gets red carded, so he'll obviously be missing the next game. Ambrose out injured, so poor Isaac Davis is going to have to lead the line for them. Reagan Charles Cook comes off the bench, so does Jerome Dome, and those two combine to win all 3 points for Erpen. That's two wins and a draw for them this season, which is just, they really, really need all those points. Massive, massive defeat for Kortrijk. They're the only side that haven't got a single point this season. They were one of the favourites to be relegated. It's just, the whole takeover situation, everything that's gone on this summer has just culminated in this situation where they're losing 3-1 at Erpen at home. And you're just kind of starting to wonder what chance do they have of really doing anything? They're looking very Sarangy, I guess we could say, without the kind of excuses that Sarang had last season in terms of they literally were on a shoestring budget, picking up anything they could find. Kortrijk have just gone and picked up a couple of players like in Malinov that have the league experience, Sasaka as well. But it is a really, really bleak outlook. And I don't want us to keep talking about it every week, but I feel like we're 4 games in and it is just super, super bleak for them. And I do feel for the fans there.
Yeah, I think everything Ben highlights there is really interesting because to me there's a feeling of kind of panic about the place. You know, last week we were saying that the three players that they brought in a short space of time within a few days last week didn't make a great deal of sense, one of which Thierry Ambrose, I mean, certainly they needed, you know, some reinforcements up top, I think. Thierry Ambrose obviously has, and get well soon, Thierry, because I happen to know somebody who has actually snapped their Achilles on more than one occasions, and as injuries go, that is... that's horrific stuff. It's one of those injuries that tends to reoccur as well. It's one of those things that ultimately, you know, once you've done it once, is always going to be vulnerable as well, hence why he needs the surgery to knit it together as well as possible. So that ankle's always going to be vulnerable for him now, unfortunately. And in light of what Ben was saying about him having second thoughts, there's just, you know, yeah, it's just strange times at Kortrijk. Just to underline, we know what the issues are there, but they've conceded 13 goals now across the opening four games, and that tells us everything we need to know about them, aside from the other issues. Big win for Eupen, you know, and I think they knew that this was a game that, you know, if they were going to do anything at all this season, they're the sorts of games that they're going to have to win. They've brought in a couple, as Ben was saying as well, seem to be populating themselves with the ex-Bundesliga players, as Ben was saying. That will probably continue because of some of the links inside the club now. Big game, as we were alluding to earlier this weekend, coming up between Kortrijk and Standard. Not one that we're necessarily looking forward to. It could be a bit of an eye bleeder. But then, having said that, now it will probably end up being 5-4 to something.
And having said that, now when we can continue like that, so that, yeah, these games, often the games that you don't expect to be good are actually good, and the other way around, I guess we could say that. That's only one way to find out, obviously. And since there will be a bit of less games this week, definitely want to watch if you want to watch, pick one game this weekend, upcoming weekend. But I think you guys already said a lot as well. Discussing Kortrijk, yeah, you've already done it so much. We've already done it so much as well. Maybe we can always just say, like, hopefully they get their first point soon. A nice goal from Kadri. That's the silver lining there, I guess. Although, on the other hand, is it a silver lining if it's not really a team goal or a tactical change or something doing that? But yeah, nonetheless. And Avenatti was a bit unlucky before in the game as well. He already hitting the woodwork twice. So the world could have looked a bit different if one of those balls would have gone in, of course. But on the other hand, two away wins in two attempts so far, so that's looking good for them. Another team like Sint-Truiden actually that are doing better than most people expected, I believe, at the moment. And I just want to highlight that Nuhu got two assists there as well, and the second one was really, or was it one of them the one with the back heel was really nice. Anyway, everything else has been said, and Eupen off to a good start, unexpectedly maybe. On the one hand, on the other hand, that's what they usually do. That's so far how they've managed to stay in the league the last few seasons as well. Way too early, of course, to predict if that scenario will repeat itself. But yeah, at least they can be free of some relegation worries early in the season.
Yeah, it is like they love a good quick start, but it's the kind of the back end where they just completely and utterly fall apart. I was going to say, with the kind of Kortrijk Standard game, I was wondering whether you could say that Kortrijk actually will have the best player of the two sides in Kadri. I said it's probably between him and Balakrishna maybe, but Kadri, you're kind of going to get more goals out of. So that's an interesting one to keep an eye on. Scott, let's go down to the second tier, and why don't you give us an update of how that all happened in the Challenger this weekend?
Well, we've reached match day two in the Challenger Pro League this season, so still very early days, obviously. But in terms of what happened this weekend, Anderlecht Futures beat Dender 3-2. Lommel won 1-0 against Club Next. I actually saw all of this game. Lommel started the season very well, looking much more solid. Nick Shinton, by the way, Club Next goalkeeper, had a fantastic game here. He was really, really good. He had four or five, I thought, first-class saves. And he'll be, you know, probably the most disappointed to have walked away from that game without getting anything in the end. Elsewhere, Zulte Waregem picked up their first points. They beat Beerschot 2-1 thanks to Messrs Vossen and Gano. Denza won 1-0 against Oostend, who've lost their opening two now. They've had a poor start. Beveren toiled to a 1-1 draw against Serang, which in some ways wasn't the worst result in the world, considering that their goalkeeper, Bo Royce, got sent off inside the first 5 minutes. The referee in this game actually was quite interesting. He attracted quite a lot of stick, and I can kind of see why. He didn't really have a lot of control of this game. There was a lot of kind of bad blood in it, some wild challenges flying around, and probably should have been more than the one red. Lierse won 2-1 against Patro Eisden, and Jong Genk battered Fromberin 5-2. They've had a great start to the season as well, which is quite interesting, come flying out the traps. And in the Liège derby, SL16 beat RFC Liège 2-1. There as well. So in terms of where we are at the moment, Jong Genk and Lommel are setting the early pace. Lommel looking very good, as I was saying. They impressed me this weekend. That kind of slight imbalance and lightness that they've had in the side seems to have been addressed, that's for sure. And Oostend and RFC Liège, the only sides yet to pick up.
And Lommel still have to score before the 90th minute as well at that. That's interesting as well. If you don't concede before that, obviously that's actually the perfect way of going into a season. Yeah, I wanted to add that. Also, I'm wondering, I've watched parts of the game because unfortunately there was an overlap with the senior Genk side in the under-23s, Jong Genk here, because of the movement of the... Yeah, normally that this thing kind of thing should not happen too often anymore, but because of Genk playing in Europe and on Thursdays now, and that game being moved, that was unfortunately the case. But anyway, I managed to watch some of the game against Fromberin, and I'm still wondering. Of course, things will change. So, like, but at the current state of affairs, I'm really wondering how Fram have been able to manage to win against Zulte Waregem, and what that says about both sides as well. But another point is all under 23 teams have won a game after two games already as well. I believe it's probably similar as last season, actually, in that sense. Well, a lot of surprising results in general.
Yeah, one of the Amando Lepage goal for Anderlecht Futures is just ridiculous. I don't know if you guys saw that, like the touch he does and then the volley is just unbelievable. If you haven't seen it, definitely look it up. That one's just, yeah, absolutely unreal.
And also look at his defending though on the second tender goal. He was
we'll let him get away with it.
We'd laugh about that goal this week, didn't we, me and Joris? Because, of course, eagle-eyed listeners will know that the player we're talking about is actually the grandson of a certain Paul van Imst, which is a hell of a name to live up to. So he's capable of, you know, little moments of brilliance like that. But as Joris says, you know, there are moments where you think, you know, is this really the Van Himst line that we're seeing here? So, you know, I suppose he's on a hiding to nothing.
Kelvin John got another goal as well. I'm going to start the Kelvin John to play for the senior Genk team movement very, very soon. Whether Joris agrees with it or not, I'm coming. There's your striker, Kelvin. Anyway, that probably wraps it up for this week. As we said, good luck to all the sides in Europe. Let's hope they can get off to a good start. But yeah, it's going to be some tough games. This IK Athens side look pretty decent on paper, to say the least. Some very good players in there. But fingers crossed. Yeah, Scott and Joris, as always, it's been a pleasure returning as the Trident, as Scott says.
It has indeed. Have an absolutely lovely weekend, everybody. And we'll see you soon.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that nickname, but okay, let's take it. Have a great week, everyone, and make sure you get some games on Thursday, I guess, since there are plenty of them.
As per usual, if you like what we do, please leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. And if you have any questions for us for next week's episode, please do get in touch with us via the usual channels. But once again, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Belgian Football Podcast, and we'll see you all next week for another one.